It's funny where your tits can get you. Well, maybe funny isn't the optimal word to be used here. But in my case, it was funny in a sort of absurd funny kind of way that the soft protruding tissue on my chest ultimately led me here to the Soho Hotel in central London. Without my breasts, who knows where I would have ended up? I didn't grow up going to five-star hotels, I can tell you that. I might have grown up in London, but my London and this London are very different. This world was foreign. It was posh. It screamed money. Where I grew up, southeast of the river, people locked their car doors when they stopped at a red light to ensure they weren't stolen. I was lucky if my mum brought us a KFC family bucket for dinner. My people had meal tickets, not reservations. We didn't do sit-down dinners. It was chicken shops, kebabs, and crime. People sold drugs, got into fights, drank themselves silly, and went to jail. There wasn't much else to do. But then, because of my tits, everything changed overnight. I went from living on a council estate to owning a luxurious apartment overlooking the Thames. I had a moderate amount of fame and more MySpace friend requests than I could accept. According to FHM magazine, I was the second sexiest woman in the world and the ninth most eligible bachelorette. Hot, successful, and famous men wanted to date me. And I wished, oh how I wished, I had been running wild and collecting funny stories to share with friends. You know, the kind of stories that leave people in stitches when you tell them that some guy you met on a train insisted on kissing you with an ice cube in his mouth, or the boy you fancied from the movie you loved when you were younger only has sex from behind while listening to a book on tape. These funny stories could have been mine, but instead, I was celibate. Over a year without so much as a kiss. The idea of sex had traumatized me so deeply that even the thought of going on a date and kissing someone new had me breaking out in hives and ready to run into a convent. And I was only 21. 21. I was supposed to be living my best life, or as I like to say, my breast life. I was inside this fancy-ass hotel, and yet I was depressed. And just when I thought it couldn't get any worse, Anna walked in to depress me even further. Anna was in her mid-30s, or maybe 40s, who knows, I was never that good at guessing someone's age. She oozed sophistication and looked every inch the journalist and writer who wrote pieces of merit for the highbrow British newspaper she worked for. I imagined her writing witty, intellectual articles on current affairs. And how pissed off she must have been that her editor had sent her to interview me. Me, a page three and glamour model. For those unfamiliar, page three was a feature in The Sun, a Rupert Murdoch-owned tabloid showcasing topless female models on its third page from 1970 to 2015. Controversial yet iconic, it launched many models, some as young as 16, into the public eye, often making them household names. Glamour modelling includes page three, but also refers to modelling in publications like FHM, Maxim, or what many called the lads mags. While these magazines didn't always feature topless photographs, they still emphasised a model's attractiveness over elements like fashion or branding. So there I was, a topless titty model, and wait for it, I'd just released my first single, Voyeur, and a raunchy music video to go along with it. It makes me cringe greatly to say these words. I must confess, I have the musical talent of a slug and the singing voice of a drowning rabbit. And as for my dancing, well, I've often been asked by panic friends if I'm okay. But I was severely desperate. So desperate. Let me tell you how desperate I was. I'd been known to say that there was no way on earth you would catch me dead releasing a single. I knew my limitations. I knew how much shit I would get, and I swore there was no way I'd humiliate myself like that. But then my ex did something that made every bit of that embarrassment pale in comparison. What he did wasn't just humiliating, it was devastating. It was a reason I was popping an antidepressant every morning, seeing a therapist once a week, a hypnotherapist twice a week, and paying a life coach slash healer slash unlicensed counsellor called Pat £75 a fortnight to cure me by making me cups of English breakfast tea. I was doing all of this because my ex broke into my home with a knife, and then he sold a video of the two of us having sex to a national newspaper. He violated me in a way that was unforgivable, and I couldn't stop it. The video spread online like a highly contagious disease. The pain and public humiliation were insurmountable. The world assumed I wanted it. The world thought I'd released it. In their eyes, I was topless in the newspaper, showing my tits off to everyone. So of course I was the kind of girl who'd release a sex tape because, duh, I was obviously a fame-hungry, attention-seeking whore who must have been trying to be the next Pamela Anderson, or Paris Hilton, or my favourite accusation, Kim Kardashian. Which is wild because my tape came out before Kim, so unless I was a time traveller, that one's impossible. But there you have it. Apparently, I was trying to be Kim months before anyone knew who she was. When the video came out, I felt like I had no control, no way to fight back. So I did what desperate people do. I grasped at anything to bury it, to divert attention. That's how I found myself singing titillating lyrics into a microphone before having my voice completely auto-tuned. Then I danced around in my underwear in a music video that I personally paid for, because that's what desperate, traumatized people do. Of course, it was an awful, exploitative idea that my manager had convinced me was genius. Releasing the music video will replace the other video online, and the people who know will forget, and the people who don't know won't, he said. And I stupidly went along with it because at the time, I was too busy crying to come up with ideas that didn't involve me crying. Now that I had released my terrible new single and music video, I had to promote it. That's why I was at the Soho Hotel meeting Anna. I was here to talk about my new career as a singer. How exciting for both of us. The interview started off worse than I imagined. I stood up from my seat and I was preparing my hand to greet her when she aggressively threw her black handbag down in the middle of the square wooden table. Her brown eyes looked me up and down. It was an assessment I didn't particularly like, though one I was used to. It felt part and parcel of being female, the scanning, the once-over, the picking apart everything about me before deciding if she liked me. And I got the vibe that she didn't. So that made two of us. After noticing her disdain for my existence, I decided to be friendly, kill with kindness and all. "I like your Prada handbag," I said cheerfully. "My friend just purchased the same one." She immediately shut me down, replying in her posh, moneyed British accent, the kind of accent that only comes with rich parents and access to a private education. She couldn't have because it's old. I was about to say, well, I think hers might have come from a market store in Thailand, but I didn't get to say this because she didn't give me a chance. Instead, she pulled out her notepad and pen, followed by a little black voice recorder, and jumped right in with her questions. Thankfully, many didn't make the final cut. Do you think rape is associated with page 3? I didn't know if Anna was serious, so I stared at her for a second, trying to get some form of indication from her oval, stoic face. When I realised she possessed no capacity for joking, I said, "Excuse me?" She spelled it out for me like I was in preschool. "Do you think men rape women because of page 3? I looked at her in disbelief. The condescension was bad enough, but did she just seriously ask me, If I thought the job I had as a page three model contributed in some way to rape? I didn't even know how to begin answering the question. Was that a thing people actually thought? Was I being accused of playing a part in one of the most awful things a man can do to a woman? Did my job in any way contribute to rape? No, I said bashfully and looked down at the green skirt I was wearing. It was a sickening thought and a question laced with accusations that left me uneasy. I had never encountered the belief that there was a link between the mass circulation of images of women appearing semi-naked on page three and sexual violence. I later learned there is no evidence to support this theory. And having not been exposed, I hadn't been able to formulate any thoughts or opinions on the matter. I'd barely had an education. Before I left school at 16, I'd spent so little time on campus that court proceedings had been taken against my mother to send her to jail. Lucky for her, I turned 16 before her court date and was legally allowed to leave school. Otherwise, it would have been bye-bye, Amber Jane. That's my mother's name, by the way. But anyway, I don't want to do my school a disservice. They did teach us about women's rights. The lesson went something like, women couldn't vote, and now they can. Hooray for women. At least it was more detailed than our one and only female sex education class, where they taught us how to put a condom on a banana and then sent us on our way. While I knew what rape was, I'd never questioned why men raped or had a detailed conversation about the psychology behind it. I'd never questioned why there were photos of topless women in a national newspaper. They were just there. Photos of tits in the newspaper had been around since I was born, just like cars and electricity. My parents' education wasn't any better. While they both had access to schools, the education they received was below basic. My dad had never been taught how to read and write, and the only thing my mother had learned in her adolescence was how to down a pint. It wasn't exactly like I'd been nurtured in an environment that cultivated these conversations and ideas. Page three? Rape? What the f-? I sat there completely sideswiped, and Anna pressed on with her questions. Do you think men see you as an object? I swallowed hard, then muttered weakly. I don't think men see me as an object. She looked at me, sneered, and then rolled her eyes. This is why my mother hates posh people, I thought. This is why. They always think they're better than the likes of us, the working class people, she told me as a child. They look down on us with the scum of the earth to them. I felt very uneasy. So I fixed my eyes on Anna's bag and waited for the next question. I kept staring at the Prada triangle until the letters became blurry. Then finally, the question of all questions came. A question I will never forget. Are you a feminist? She asked, leaning back in her chair and crossing her arms. I repeated the question in my head before darting my eyes around the room and squirming in my chair, unsure how to answer. Was I a feminist? How did I know if I was a feminist? And more importantly, what the heck was a feminist? Oh crap, what was a feminist? I had to know what it meant. Hadn't I heard that word somewhere before? Was it a French word? It had to relate to my line of work somehow, but how? Come on, I thought, you have to know what this word means. Truth be told, I had no clue. Growing up poor, you're too busy worrying about putting food on the table and keeping a roof over your head. You don't have much time to think about anything else. Survival comes first, always. Sure, you see inequality, it's impossible to miss, but the words to explain it, they're not in your vocabulary. Life as a boy was different from life as a girl. We all knew that. Us girls would talk about how unfair it was, how men seemed to have it easier. But where I come from, no one sat around on a Friday night drinking cheap cider and tossing around words like feminist. Working class women just weren't doing that. Anna waited for an answer, but one wasn't coming. We sat there in silence as I racked my brain trying to understand what feminist meant. She kept looking at me in anticipation and I kept stumbling, trying to bide my time. I knew I had one of two options. I was either a feminist or I wasn't. But if I said I was a feminist and it meant something offensive like racist, then that was bad, really, really bad. Then, out of nowhere, a miracle happened and it came to me. A light bulb went off in my head. Feminist means nudist. It means someone who likes taking their clothes off in public places. I knew I'd get it. I'm not a feminist, I replied proudly, but I can see why people would think I am one. Anna raised her left eyebrow in a way that suggested she was impressed, or at least that's how I interpreted it. I sat there chuffed. In my mind, she was trying to ask me if I was a nudist because of my job, which made sense. But she was obviously trying to trick me by using this big, fancy French word. Anna leaned forward slightly and uncrossed her arms. Why would people think you're a feminist? She asked with such intent that I began to question if I had, in fact, got the meaning of the word right. But at this point, I couldn't ask her. It was clear that she already thought I was a moron. I couldn't serve myself up on a plate for her amusement. And if the last time I asked someone what a word meant was anything to go by, I was 18 and it was narcotics, I'd been scolded with so much ridicule that I'd rather pretend to know what the word meant than go through that again. Sometimes it's just easier to pretend you know what the word means or that you've seen the movie, you know? I think that maybe my line of work just gives off the impression that I am a feminist. She picked up her pen and started scribbling in her notepad. I watched the pen touch the paper and I tried to see what she was writing. I couldn't make out a single word but feared it might be. Keely is completely thick and doesn't have a clue what she is talking about, which is why she is a glamour model. The stereotype of the bimbo topless model is confirmed. We can all go home. This fear only made me more determined to nail the rest of the interview to prove myself. I'd never been asked questions like this before, and I wanted to be able to answer them in an eloquent, intellectual, Jane Austen novel-like fashion. I was ready, up for the challenge. I psyched myself up and waited for the next question. Do you ever wonder what men are thinking when they look at your pictures? Anna asked with the intonation of a police officer, and I crumbled. My brain was suddenly filled with flashbacks of tribute videos I'd seen of men touching themselves while looking at topless photos of me before ejaculating all over my tits. I wanted to put my fingers in my ears and scream. My body felt hot and I lost all confidence in my ability to form sentences, and I had to stop myself from replying that my hair looks nice. After a few more questions, all centered around whether or not I thought my music video was soft porn, the interview concluded, and Anna and her old but real Prada bag departed the Soho Hotel. I sat there feeling mentally raped and furious. I watched her back as she receded around the corner and listened to the tapping of her shoes as they faintly disappeared into the distance. I went and got the tube and returned home to my lonely, sterile apartment in Canary Wharf, a part of London to be visited if you worked in banking, but under no circumstances lived in. I sat on my sofa and typed feminist into the search engine on my laptop. I crossed my fingers and prayed it meant the French word for nudist. Please mean nudist. Please mean nudist. The search engine loaded, and when the response came up, a person who supports feminism, I wasn't immediately disheartened because I thought, huh, well, it could be a person who supports people being naked. So I searched the word feminism and discovered the real meaning. I stared at the screen, rolled off the sofa onto my salt and pepper rug, and let out a cry. Wow. I was an idiot. I felt so stupid. A person who supports equal pay between men and women was a definition on the website I was looking at. On others, it was described as the advocacy of women's rights on the basis of the equality of the sexes. How it had nothing to do with nudity was beyond me. Why there was even a term needed to describe a person who believed in equal pay between men and women who were both doing the same job was so baffling to me. And at the same time, it wasn't. I was born with a vagina and knew what that experience was like, even if I didn't yet have the vocabulary to articulate it. Anxiously, I started rubbing the scar on my nose with my index finger. I pushed my finger deep into the scar groove and then along my nose, feeling where I'd broken it. I rubbed my finger along my scar until it started to make me feel sick to my stomach. And then I decided to take a trip to the library to look for feminist literature, so I would never be caught off guard again. The selection of books was small. There was only one shelf with maybe 10 or 20 books on the subject. Most of them had titles I couldn't understand, like The Feminine Mystique, which I took as The Feminine Mystic, and flicked through thinking that maybe I would find a detailed description of my horoscope inside. I picked up a book on objectification and put it under my arm, and I grabbed two other books, thinking I would start there. I presented my library card and I checked them out. Then, that evening, I sat on my sofa with the books, a dictionary, a notebook, a pen, and a pencil. I turned pages and read randomly. I looked up words I didn't know the meaning of and I tried to understand them. Words that made me wonder if English was actually my second language. I grappled with the concept of objectification. The idea that some men could view women purely as objects without considering anything else about them, their personality, intelligence, individuality, or God forbid, the fact that they have their own thoughts and feelings. Yep, I can relate to that, I thought, before suddenly remembering the short movie idea I'd come up with when I was trying to think of ways to bury the sex tape. I'd play a girl who was completely naked in a bedroom, crying my eyes out and slitting her wrists with a knife, screaming, "Is this what you want?" Admittedly, it was a little dark. But I wanted to convey that I was more than just a body to be admired and looked at, something I hadn't achieved in my music video as I danced around in my underwear and sang, "I don't care, you can stare." Over the next few months, I kept reading, and I started to see the threads that tied my experiences to something larger, to structures and systems and culturally ingrained ways of thinking. I started to understand the apparent differences between men and women and how they were treated and viewed when it came to sex and sexuality. And honestly, my mind was blown and my eyes opened. Suddenly, feminism explained everything I had felt my whole life and been unable to express. When I learned the meaning of patriarchy, I threw my hands into the air. Now I get it. It was like I had just found Christ. Except, and this is one big exception, when people find Christ, they often feel a profound sense of peace, forgiveness, and renewal. There's typically a deep emotional relief, and I can't say I felt the same way when I found feminism. My findings left me frustrated and angry, feeling like being a woman was just one big trap. Like a too-good-to-be-true competition where you won an all-inclusive holiday to Mallorca. But the hotel's next available day is 30 years later. I kept replaying the interview with Anna in my head, over and over, stuck in an endless loop of rumination. Each time I'd answer her questions differently. Sometimes I would yell or scream. Oftentimes I'd calmly explain things I'd learned since then. On rare occasions, I'd imagine us having long conversations over a glass of wine about living under the patriarchy, or how working-class women experience gender oppression differently from middle and upper-class women. Mostly, though, I'd find myself defending my job and my decisions. I'd mentally map out how capitalism, class, beauty standards, and patriarchy all shaped my career choice. I'd tell her that my profession had far more to do with financial necessity than with any lofty ideals, that this was a class issue, and how dare middle-class women who have more resources and opportunities shame women who don't? But no matter how many ways I justified myself or broke down society to understand it, I kept coming back to that one loaded question: are you a feminist? And I didn't know how to answer. Yes, I believed in equality and equal pay between men and women. But did I align with the women who claimed to speak on behalf of all women but somehow excluded me from that group because they blamed girls who posed nude for rape culture? Or who blamed women who seemed to play into these oppressive systems for the lack of progression of the movement? Not particularly. Sometimes we don't have conclusive answers because we're still figuring it out. And at 21, I was still figuring a lot of things out. Heck, I was still waiting for my frontal lobe to finish developing. But if there was one thing learning about feminism gave me, it was the permission to ask myself questions about who I was and what I wanted. Not long after this fatal interview, I quit topless modeling and I moved halfway across the world. For the first time, I took control of my life and did something out of desire, not necessity. But even then, it came with complications because the world is what the world is. And as infuriating as that can be, you still must learn to live in it.